Okay, here we go. Sorry. 10 minutes. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous this time for about 11 and a half years. And, I got here the first time when I was 18 years old, and I believe it was on my first drunk drive. And since then I've had four other ones, so I've got five drunk drivings, and every drunk driving carries about seven trips of barbed wire if you don't do anything. So that'll give you a little bit about my history. I was 35. I don't know, my first one I only had to do four, so I've been in jail 32 times. And over 500 drivers. That's all I've ever done. I mean, I'm not a criminal. In other words, I won't steal your stuff, but I'll ask somebody to go get me something at night, and they'll go steal it, and I'll buy it from them. So that's the justification that I use. I'm not really a criminal. I would just buy your stuff. And and I got a lot of funny stories like that, you know. But in the end, there's some deadly earnestness at the bottom of all this, and I almost drank myself to death. And I can tell you a little bit of what Alcoholics Anonymous is not, and how it's taken me 12 years to find out what it really is. And like I said, I've done a lot of different stuff, and you know, there's a lot of people, these old guys that come in here, and you know, they just fall in here from out of the gutters, you know. And I kind of admire those guys, you know, because they didn't get a lot of the stuff that I got. Doesn't make me unique. It just makes me, this is my story. This is where I went. Because I wanted to do something different. I always wanted to be unique, because Alcoholics Anonymous had my dad was here, and my mom and my aunts and my uncles, and it was a family reunion when I got here. And this was not where I wanted to be. Alcoholics Anonymous is not where I wanted. I was cool. I wanted to be somehow, I just wanted to be normal. Nobody in my family, I wanted to be the one that was normal. Well, so anyways, I fought that deal, and it didn't happen for me. I got here via the, I've been to about eight treatment facilities. So they taught me a lot of weird stuff in there. And they do this. They do a lot of this. And they do it just like this. Never do you do this. They hold it up. And they don't give you one. About $12,500 I paid for one, and that was cheap. So I'm just telling you, those are some of the places I've been. And so, like I said, I've been to those places, and then I've been to the one where they make you pee in a bottle place. I've been there, and they watch. That's uncomfortable at first. And then after a while, after a whole year of that, you know, you just kind of walk in. You don't care who's watching. You know, you can do that from across the room. And let me just tell you that all these things I'm trying to tell you, they didn't keep me sober. They gave me some warped ideas, some warped sense of what was in this book. And so, like I said, I've read this book. I've read it for a long time. I've done a lot of stuff. And the last program I did was I've done SWAP, I've done Bob Wise, I've done Road Camp, I've done the chain gang, whatever, the guys on the freeway. I've been one of them guys numerous times. And then the last one I did was I did the RSET deal. And they kept me out there for 242 days. And did this. And then they did anger management classes. You don't got to let me out of the angry. And so I was doing some anger management classes, some child rearing classes, and all kind of weird stuff. And then, of course, they make you make your bed at 7 o'clock in the morning. I've been a lot of places that tell me I could stay sober if I could make my bed at a certain time and call people and do weird stuff like that, you know. And I looked in the book, and I didn't find nowhere where I got called nobody. I didn't find where I made my bed. It doesn't say you make your bed in here. But that, like I said, I was reading this book at the same time I'm getting all this information. So I thought maybe they knew more. I mean, because I was warped. I mean, I had some warped. I mean, I was delusional. So I didn't know. I trusted people to know what was in here. And so anyway, long story short, you know, there's a reason I'm telling you all this. So, like I said, in the end, you know, I did the 242 days, and I did 22 months in drug court. What happened for me was I was able to get out of jail, and I was able to have the pee in that bottle, and I was able to stay sober. The work that I did when I was incarcerated carried me through for a while. And then I went through some series of some other stuff. And meanwhile, when I say I did some work. Okay, I did some work to the best of my abilities with what the information that I had. But I just told you where I came from. I went to Betty Ford and we were there. Once again, we did this. And then the first night I got there, they said, "Hey, how many of you want your prime rib?" And I just say, "Thanks, Rick. Rick just bought me the best prime rib in the world." And that's what I thought of the whole time, was Betty Ford. They said, "How do you want your prime rib cut?" And I thought, wow, this is how you stay sober. You know? And they had a bunch of therapy classes, and I was with a bunch of prominent people that you know, and I learned a bunch of secrets, and I had to sign a piece of paper and tell them I would never tell nobody. Bobby Brown, and he was trying not to tell nobody those things. You could tell an alcoholic not to say something, and you're going to make him sign a piece of paper. Come on. So anyway, like I said, so I learned a lot of weird stuff, you know, because that's what I put in this. My book, the book says I'm delusional, okay? And I'm going to lie to myself any way I can to do the easier, softer way. I always have. I've always done it that way. You know, and I used to say, "Man, if I'd have just turned right, I wouldn't have got the drunk driving." That's delusional. Are the airplanes coming down? No? I'm going to be okay. It's going to hit the ground. Everything's going to be okay if I jump at the correct moment. I believe those things. So I'm delusional. I believe that weird stuff. I believe that it's going to be different this time if I drink. It's going to be great like it was the first time. The first time I drank was great, I think. And so, anyway, like I said, I've been to all these places and I've learned a lot of stuff. And unfortunately, a lot of the stuff I learned was incorrect. And so when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I asked a couple people to be my sponsor. One of them told me, one of some guy that has 25 years I know, he told me, he says, "Hey, just lock yourself in a room for 3 days and do a whole bunch of writing. And then go tell somebody. I'll see you later." Well, yeah, but I believe you. See, I believe people in here. Man, for years and years and years, man, I thought everybody walked on water in here. I didn't know, you know. I didn't know they were all just as sick as I was. You know, and so like I said, and I'm not downplaying, you know, this is my story. This is just how it happened. It might happen for somebody else like this. I don't know. And so like I said, so in the end, what's happened for me is through the course of the last 12 years, I've learned some things. First of all, you know, I'm doing some weird stuff. I've done the work 3 different times, okay? And now I'm suffering from middle of the road sobriety, what the book says for me. That's what it says, okay? And what that means for me is, because I haven't done the precise instructions. I've been able to stay sober, but I'm suffering from middle of the road sobriety. Because that's what the book says. Not what other people say. See, once you start opening it and reading it slowly, once I opened it and read it slowly, and then was pointed out to me by some people that I trust, okay, they're showing me the precise instructions, I now feel like I'm on the right track, okay? I feel like I'm doing the right deal. And so it's kind of funny, you know, when we talk about humility and we talk about this ego deflation, okay? I'm the cockiest dude I know besides you. And so what I'm saying is, man, after being 12 years, I mean, I could really blow some hot air up your butt, okay? And you know how humbling that is to have a sponsor that has half your sobriety, okay, telling you the truth, okay, and you know it's right, because in your innermost self you're like, dude, I don't feel like I'm faking a phony anymore. Somebody's showing me the precise instructions. That's what it says. It says precise instructions. And if I'm not doing those, then I'm suffering from middle of the road sobriety. That's what it says. I've missed some of the meat of the program, okay, because why? I did it by myself. I did it with the best that I've been given, but, you know, it wasn't accurate. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not putting anybody down. There's a lot of that that goes on. And so I guess my message is, you know, for once in my sobriety, I've been here since I was 18 years old. I'm 44 years old, and I feel like I'm on the path. And I feel like I've recovered, you know, I feel like I'm free, I can go anywhere, I'm going through some serious stuff right now. One thing, I started a business. That sounds important, or it sounds exciting. Oh my God! Stupid! Why would anybody do this? You know, and then I got married. Oh my God! Why would I do something like that? You know, and now we're doing some serious splitting up now again, you know. And so in the end, what I'm saying is I'm not worried about drinking.
I want everything this program offers. And if I believe that this thing will give me everything it says it will, it does. I see people around here all day long. I want it all. I don't want half middle-of-the-road sobriety anymore. I don't want to come in here and lie to you people. You know, and like I said, I can really sound good. And I've done everything I think I'm doing. But is it the precise instruction? I'm going to say no. Okay, because I've been shown. And then here's what they're calling me in my book. In my new book study, they said, well, you're a newcomer. Let me show you in the book. And they show me the book, and they said, if you haven't worked the first step five precisely as it is as outlined in the big book, you're still a newcomer. Thanks for letting me share.
My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. What's up, Dale? It's an honor to be here tonight. Yeah, to speak and share my strength and hope with you guys. It's been a long time since I did a speaker meeting. I got to tell my story, but I don't want to get too lost in the story tonight and the war stories and those details. I want to share a little bit about that, but I also want to talk about hope in this AA recovery program, and how the 12 steps have helped me transform my life and introduced me to a program and myself. Some of you guys know me in the room and heard my story. I see a lot of faces I don't know here. Just a little bit about me was I grew up in the Bisario area and started drinking at a young age, 9 years old. From the first time I can remember when I took a drink of alcohol, I had something I like to refer to kind of as an internal compulsion to drink until full intoxication. I never set out to drink, just a couple of drinks, and then call it a night. I've never had that ability in my body. And I know there's other people here that have a different experience, but for me that was mine, and I don't know where I got it from. I did have an alcoholic father. Alcoholism runs in my family. My father's father was an alcoholic. All his uncles were alcoholics. All my uncles were alcoholics. And I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not, but from the moment I started drinking, I always drank before intoxication. It was always the purpose of picking up a drink. First time I did drink, I can't say that I loved the taste of alcohol, but for a second there, I liked the effect. But it wasn't soon after when I was throwing up, and I remember thinking, man, I can't do that again because I got caught and I got punished. But when I was about 11 years old, I started drinking again. I started slipping whiskey out of my uncle's liquor cabinet. And, you know, me and my cousin were running in, we'd take a shot, and he'd say, okay, let's go back to here now. And I was going, no, wait, hey, can I take another shot? He couldn't understand that, too. Like, my mom's going to notice it's all gone. And I was like, you know, when I was an alcoholic, consequences don't matter that much. So basically, my drinking progressed from there. And, you know, it really took off. The pattern seemed to fit me, my character, and you know, alcohol did a lot for me. And by the time I was 14, I can honestly say that I was a full blown alcoholic. I had uncontrollable drinking habits. As far as I didn't drink every day, that was part of my rationale, my denial too, was that I'm not an alcoholic. An alcoholic is my dad, because he's a daily drinker. Or I would compare myself to other people. But when I did drink, I drank until full intoxication. Usually it ended up with me blacking out or getting sick or going to jail or something like that. And so that was my story. My disease progressed very quickly. I know there's a lot of people here who say that they drank for 25 years and then realized they were an alcoholic. My story didn't work that way. There's a story in the book. It refers to a guy named Jim on page 35, where I really identify with. Jim was a guy, most of you guys probably know this from reading the big book. He didn't start drinking until he was 35 years old. But in a matter of 3 years, he was a full-blown alcoholic. And I relate to that story. Yeah, the ages were a little different, but really, all the effects were still the same. And I had a similar experience. And basically between the ages of 14 and 15, From the time I got sober, I was looking for a way to get sober. So I just want to show you guys a couple of things I tried to get sober that really ended up not working for me until I found this program. You know, so basically what happened, I was having the experience, which is referred to in the big book as Alcoholic Destruction. And, you know, it just, like I said, for me, the disease progressed quickly. And by the time I was 14, 15, I was hopeless. I was living on the street, living out of a duffel bag. You know, alcohol wasn't doing everything for me no more. And I was wanting help. You know, and I know a lot of people don't have that experience. And the big book even talks about people with age, with youngsters, have a problem identifying themselves as alcoholics as an age. But for me, I had all the same symptoms as somebody who's drank for 40 years, you know. But my experience, I'm going to read this from page 48. It just runs, it says, faced with an alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us in the state of reasonableness. When I was 15, I got tired of drinking, and I got tired of trying to control things, and I basically reached out for help. And the only person that had to help me at that time was a family member. And the way of getting help was basically turning myself into the police, because they were looking for me for a while at that time. And I was going to do it. I didn't know what was going to happen. I was afraid I was going to, you know, something bad was going to happen. I thought I was going to, like it talks about, I was going to end up in an institution, followed behind some criminal behavior, or I was going to die, and alcohol was death. I was going to, you know, it couldn't get no worse. When it talks about the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, that's what I was experiencing. And I wanted a way out. So my grandmother said, Johnny, I can't have nothing to do with you unless you turn yourself into cops. And I may go on to do some time, but I said, you know what, at this point, I can't do this no more, so I'm going to do that. So I went and did some time, and I made promises to my grandma. And this is one of the techniques I tried when I was trying to confront my alcohol problem. So I went in and I did some time, and I went to a group home, to an institution. What happens when I'm in this group home, I make a bunch of promises, and then, you know, the day comes when it's time for Johnny to go home, and I swear off the drink forever, and I say, when I come home, I'm going to be a different man. And I come home, and then what do all good alcoholics do when they get released from an institution? They got to go stop by, go run a party room just to say hi and see how things are going, right? And that's what I did. And as soon as I did that, I said, hey, how you doing? They go, Johnny. And they were all happy to see you, kid. How you doing? You got, you know, you're back. Wow, you look real healthy. What happened to you? And everybody loved me for those first 2 weeks, you know. So everybody missed me for the first 2 weeks, and then sure I show up, and you know, the whole family, oh hey, you know, they already recognize me. Well, how can I turn down a drink? You know, and then they just went, well, why? Sure, you like to have a drink? You know, what? My, you know, and this is my problem here, is not perverted thinking. You know, it's a form of insanity. It says, well, you know what? Before I leave, I better have at least one drink with this guy. Because everybody, if I don't, that's kind of disrespectful. It's weird. Besides, I really love this guy. This is a good friend of mine. So I made all these promises to my grandmother, people that really love me. You know, and I get out of this, you know, this institutional home, and what do? I pick the first drink. Well, what happens when I pick the drink? I drink until full intoxication. And then the cycle just continues, you know. And then I go on a blender, and this is 6 or 9 months later, and I'm living on the street. I'm stealing everybody's shit, you know. I'm disrespecting my family. I'm acting very selfish. I'm causing a lot of chaos. So that's a good example of what don't work. You know, in the big quote, it talks about no human power could ever believe our alcoholism. And my brother shares a similar experience with me with this. And as far as making promises to a family member. Now, when I made those promises, I had all good intentions. But unfortunately, alcohol is stronger than me and all my good intentions. You know, so that power has to come from that ability has to, for the system to drink has to come from a power greater than myself. It can't become for me anymore. Once you become an alcoholic, you lose choice to drink. Only the first drink. So, the cycle goes on, and I end up becoming an adult at 18 and going back to jail. You know, alcohol, it does that to people. It lends us in the institutions, or into a state of despair at some point. And a lot of times, an institution is even better than a state of despair, being on the street. And for me, that's what happened. When I went to jail for about a period of a year. And so I sat up in the county jail. I did a lot of push-ups. I made my body strong. I made my mind strong. I read a lot of books, and I prayed daily. I read religious books, things like that, and I swore off the drink again. So I made all these promises one more time, and then the day comes when Johnny finally gets out, and I get out and I say, well, this time it's really going to be different. and then it happens all over again. I just got to go say hi to one more for a few while. And the cycle continues, you know. That goes to show that I'm not a guy who can't put his mind to do something and not do it. You know, I found that I can honestly say about myself. I'm a character with a lot of perseverance. You want to see him do something, I'm going to do something. But in this instance, alcohol had me licked. I had no power, you know, over to control that. And luckily, I eventually found AA. Because AA is the one who taught me that. It says you got to quit fighting it. You know, you're going to have to rely on a higher power to beat this thing. So basically what happened, I went on that blender, I got out of jail, and I ended up doing the same thing over and over on the street. Things got bad, and eventually I ended up in another institution. This time it was state prison. So I went, oh shit, this shit is just escalating, the disease is progressing, and I'm getting more and more deeper into this. Eventually what happens, I go to prison, and what do? I do the same thing again. I square off it, I make my mind strong, I try to develop a relationship with God, and I do develop a relationship with God. And then when I get out, eventually the same shit happens. I was missing something, you know. Luckily, at some point I found this program. And I came to this program, and some of these old-timers ones, the ones Dale was talking about, they seem to come in and go, shit, you ain't serious. You need 90 days, you need to read the big book, and you need to do whatever I tell you to do, basically. I don't know if any of you guys had that experience, but I was so desperate when I got here, I was willing to do what anybody was going to tell me to do, because I no longer wanted what I had. Because I knew what I had, I was going to die. You know, I was on that, I was fully convinced. I can admit to my innermost self that I was alcoholic, my life was unmanageable, and my way of controlling things was not going to work. So I came in, they gave me some instruction, and guess what did I do? I was desperate, so I read the big book, through and through, and then some of them told me, read it again, let's talk about it. Then they quizzed me on it, and we did that, and I played that, and I did whatever they told me to do, and eventually I worked a step. I started writing and doing this and that. I had a really good sponsor. I became really reliant on the sponsor. And it's what happened. I worked through all 9 steps, even though it's a 12-step program. I got in service. I was a secretary of a lot of meetings. A lot of you guys know me from when I first came around this program. And I made a lot of amends. I did a lot of work. But something happened after my 16 was. Somehow, for whatever reason, it's really broken. Me and my sponsor had it blown out. He didn't want to talk to me no more. Or whatever his reason was. It's really relevant. But what happened about a month after that, the thought of taking a drink crossed my mind. I might be able to control it. And if it's Johnny, if it gets out of hand, you could always go back to AA. I thought I earned at least one drink from doing all the good shit I did in AA for almost 2 years, right? Well, what happened is I took a drink. Because I wasn't relying on the right thing. I wasn't relying on God. A lot of my sobriety had depended on my relationship with that sponsor. And I'd become reliant on people, elders in this program, people who I look up to. You know, and I cherished the relationship I had lost, and it was a good relationship, and but something happened. I mean, as soon as that relationship with God, something happened. My sobriety changed. So I went back out. And what happened? I went on a 6-month binge. Once again, it got bad. And, you know, when they say it's progressive, and I've been suicidal before, but this time things were getting really bad. And, you know, to give you an example of how bad things were getting, back on the street, living out of a duffel bag, lost the old lady, running from a parole agent. People wanted to shoot me. Me wanted to shoot everybody. Stab people, stab my friends. You know, when they said people that they refer to as lesser than desirable company, I'd go over to different party houses and try to, and I would have tweakers and drugs looking out the window going, shit. And they would, those were loud. And everybody's loud when I pull up, and then it would get quiet. I was like, man, come on, I just need to get out of the fucking rain. And these people, and dead silent. So I mean, I don't know, when he talks about an alcoholic being like a tornado in the big book, that was me. I not only destroyed my family and my friends, I went to the streets to, you know, the less desirable company, fucked everything up with them too. You want to talk about a humbling experience? That's getting a couple of like crackheads and low life whiskey drunks to not even want anything to do with you. You know, that's pretty damn bad. You can't even bum a cigarette off a guy. Come on in and say, hey, dude, I ain't got nothing. Funny how it comes to that, you know? Funny when I first got out of jail, they came in and said, hey, man. 2 weeks later, they want nothing to do with you. And that was my experience, you know? So it got to that point. It was like, it was very humiliating to have people who were, who I thought were pretty freak and should be ashamed of themselves for the way they were treating themselves, telling me I needed to go get sober. I had people doing it. But my brother, me and my brother used to run together. And, you know, we used to drink and get crazy and treat ourselves very disrespectfully. But, and you know, it's funny, when we're driving down the street and a stolen car or something, you look over and say, dude, Johnny, you need to relax. We need to get you into a program, man. This isn't funny no more. I'm going, dude, what are you talking about? Dude, shut the hell up. So it's pretty humbling when you got other people, other drunks looking over you and saying, man, you really need to get into a program. I'm thinking, you're drunk, you are the biggest drunk I know. I say, man, talking about copping resentment. And seriously, I mean, you were copping resentment. So beyond that, what happened to me is I began to, I found myself very isolated. Nobody wanted to be around me. The people who were on the street were letting me live in the back rooms and stuff like that. Didn't want me around no more. The cops were all over me. And the guilt and the shame and stuff like that wasn't going away no more. Alcohol, it really stopped working for me, which is the scariest moment, I think, of my life, was when I couldn't drown it out no more. You know, denial was so strong. I couldn't, for a long time, I lied to myself about what was happening. And then after a while, there was too much stuff. I couldn't deny what was really happening. That's when it got scary. And I just decided, you know, I can go back to this house and get this gun. And then I could shoot myself. And all this shit would just go away. I wouldn't have to live like this no more. And I thought about that for a minute, but I thought, man, there's just no way. I just couldn't shoot myself. The thought of it was unbearable. And the other thing I thought about, anyway, and this was the only unselfish thought I had, was my grandma would read about it in the paper. And so I thought, well, I can go out and I can just jump over the bridge. And this was so I started contemplating suicide over my head. So I really had not really nowhere to go. I had one more place I could probably stay. And what happened is, on that night, it was November 28, 2002. I wanted to die. Because drinking, you couldn't stop, it wasn't an option, and drinking just really wasn't working no more. You know, I drank a bottle of Jack Daniels the night before into oblivion, but as soon as I woke up, all the feelings and everything was the same. And then I had another bottle waiting to do that. But it was like, how long can I do this? I was still in liquor on a daily basis, doing run-outs to stores and stuff, so walking down the street, and wasn't sure where I was going. It was in the rain, and I just had enough. The double bag seemed heavy. And and the dark and nobody was around, and I just dropped to my knees and I said, God, please take this shit from me, this evil shit. I'll do anything. And that's the prayer I prayed. And it wasn't pretty. I was in a very desperate state and I cried. I cried on the rain, on the asphalt, right there. And just almost in the middle of the freaking road. It's on an off road. And I was just tired, man. And no burning bush happened. Nobody said, Johnny, go ahead, Johnny, eat up now. I was out there alone. And I made this mess myself. So, I got up and I made it to my house. Anyway, next day, probably Thanksgiving Day. I was doing some other drugs and stuff too, so I got up. I made it to my grandmother's house. I was under the influence. I had a bottle of Bacardi in my backpack, and I was just waiting to say hi to my grandma and then go and start drinking. And Thanksgiving Day, I got arrested on the front porch of my house. Cops were looking for me, and that's how it went. And I don't know if that's how God answered my prayer, but to this day, I believe that's exactly how God intervened between me and alcohol. There's no other way to explain it, because I never had the ability to separate myself from that. He did for me what I couldn't do for myself. He talks about that as one of the promises in the big book. So, a lot of people think you got to be sober to work steps. You know, to me, I felt like I had a personal understanding of some of the steps already when I was drinking. I was thoroughly convinced. I was an alcoholic and I had no control. I was thoroughly convinced that I needed help. I even had an idea of who God was. Step two, coming to believe in a power greater than myself. I truly wanted to abandon myself to God. It was either that or suicide. So, I don't know, it was kind of funny, but I felt like I asked God to intervene in my life, and He did. You know? And when I went to jail that day, I cried. I was crying. I had begged the cop to let me go. I go, dude, come on, let me go. I started crying. I said, like a little baby. Can you imagine me crying? No, but I did. I remember on the porch, he goes, dude, look, he goes, if you tell me the truth, I'll let you go. And I thought, you're serious. So I go, I'm stupid. But my ass is thinking it's the only way out, this boy. Okay? And I go, all right. I did a little shit. And of course, before you're going to jail anyway, I said, you motherfucker. I got mad. Then I started crying because I had the fear of living without alcohol. That is a scary feeling. He put me in the car. I had no access to what aided me for so long. It took me away. I've never had a drink since. You know, the next day I went. I didn't sleep for about 7 or 8 hours. That was pretty fucking crazy. They were bringing me sleeping pills and shit to myself. And but when I woke up, you know, I pretended to jail for a couple months. Thankfully, because if they would ever let me out, I'm not sure if I'd be here today. So I'm pretty grateful that the cops intervened in the way they did. But anyway, so basically, is what happened. I went back to the institution. They talked about us going to institutions. Jim talked about it in his story. He talked about it, and I'm gonna read you a little clip here. He says it's just home for me. And I don't know if you guys read the story or not, but it says. It says he agreed, Jim saying this, he agreed, people from AA were talking to him, that he was a real alcoholic in a serious condition. He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family for whom he had deep affection. Yet he got drunk again. And this is my story. And then it says at the bottom, it talks about how he got drunk again, what happened. Anybody doesn't know the story about how he thought it was a good idea to have one shot of whiskey in his nose. But it says, that started one more journey to the asylum for Jim. And that started one more trip to jail for Jim. Where my story would go. But basically what had happened is that when I got in jail, I made a decision that I was going to go to AA and I was going to work the program. And I was going to try that. Because I knew if this program didn't work for me, this was the last stop on the block and I was going to die. So I was going to live in prison or asylum for the rest of my life. And so I came here desperate. I got out of jail, and this time the first thing I did was go to a meeting. I had one of my road dogs call me. That's me, a friend from way back. The day I got out, this was my, one of my top friend partners. They always want to call you right when you get out. He said, hey, bro, dude, I gotta see you. And I said, dude, I'm sober now, bro, and I'm gonna be in AA. And he said, well, that's cool. We don't even have to drink, nothing. Let's just hang out. And I said, man, I gotta hit a meeting. I'll catch you at the meeting. I went to a meeting that night. I sought out everybody in AA. If you look like somebody who's been through the steps and you can be a sponsor, I was talking to you. I would go over and stand by people who had a time. I knew I was going to die if I didn't get this. And it wasn't a laughing matter, man. My mind was all messed up. So what I did is I got involved. I read the big book actually when I was in jail. And they said, well, you got to keep reading it and doing this and that. And I kind of knew because I've been in AA before, kind of a little bit about it. So I was already into the work. Well, what happened is I ended up in a treatment center. I wrote out my whole 4-step. You know, I was working the first 3 steps, praying on a daily basis. I was developing a relationship with a higher power. And I wrote out my whole 4-step, and finally, I'd go to meetings and I was asking a lot of these old timers who give these great speeches from the podium to come see me in a treatment center and help me do a 5th step. And a lot of them didn't have time to show up. So I had to go to a lot of meetings. But eventually I found someone to listen to my 5th step. And I worked out 5th step, you know. And that's something that's real important in this program. A lot of people think, you know, you just come to this program and you go to a lot of meetings and you learn about God, you learn how to pray and have a relationship with God, and that's good, but you also got to clean house in this program, you know. And after you clean house one time, sometimes you got to do it again. And then they have a 10th step that says you continuously do it, you know. And so I worked the 5th step with a guy, learned a lot about what I was doing, and continue working on my steps, you know. And so one thing led to another. It was about 4 or 5 months sober. And it was the first day that I remember I was in a treatment program and I was doing something and I realized I stopped what I was doing and I went, it's been half a day and I haven't even thought about drinking. I haven't thought about controlling other people, nothing. And I knew God had done something different to me. He had removed the obsession to drink. He had removed some of that insanity that never let me sleep when I was on the street. And I was trying to control things, and it was just an overwhelming sense of peace and freedom that I never experienced in my whole life. I'll never forget that day. And it was only half the day. And I said, but if I can do half the day, this is crazy. Something's happened. Because I've never had a day like that. Never. I stayed up till 3 or 4 in the morning every night in the treatment center trying to go to sleep. And my thoughts were raised about how his resentment, man. When they said resentment is poison, they did not let me sleep, man. So, you know, I think a lot of that had to do with the 4th and 5th step, the 6th step, 7th step, working those steps. Somewhere along the line, God intervened. He came and he removed the obsession and drink. So my experience is just working with the 12 steps, you know. We talk about this, the AA program a lot, about coming to meetings, getting a sponsor, reading the book, getting involved in service, and that being the program. You know, it's just not one or the other. You got to do all these things. You know, you got to apply these principles in your life and work each step 1 through 12 in chronological order. You know, and it's not that hard to do. Like I told you guys before, I found AA, I tried a lot of other things. I tried self-reliance, I tried making promises, I tried reading religious books, I tried self-determination. The funny thing is, AA has brought me closer to power greater than myself, but God of my own understanding. But, and I had an experience like that previously. Why did AA work for me and that didn't? Because the people designed this program, set it up in a way that was simple. They knew alcoholics were not going to get something that was complicated, you know. And I'm very grateful that they did that, because when I got to AA, it was simple for me to say, this is exactly what I have to do, and this is exactly what I'm going to receive. And it talks about the promises in the big book, about what you can look forward to when you get here and you work this program. This program is not for people who just feel like they need a little bit of relief, or they need to get a family, they just need to work on the relationship problem, or this problem, or just need to get on probation, or you know, complete a treatment program. That's just a number of things. This program is for the people who are dying. You got to be thoroughly convinced that alcohol will kill you if you drink again. You know, it talks about that in the big book. It says to drink is to die. You know? And another thing is that you don't rely upon a sponsor. You know, that's one of the reasons why I shared my experience with you about that. Just for the purpose that don't become too reliant upon one sponsor. You know? Sponsors are human. And humans make mistakes. And I did that before and it didn't work out real well. I put somebody on a pedestal that I really, really admired, who helped a lot of people in this program. Doesn't mean he's not human and that you don't make mistakes. And what happened is I wasn't reliant upon God. See, today I have to work these steps and become reliant upon God. That's the whole purpose of the big book. Get us in touch with a higher, get us in touch with a power greater than ourselves. Because a power greater than ourselves is the only person who can restore sanity, the only person who can remove the drinking problem. So, you know, I got sober and started working this program. Eventually the obsession was removed and a lot of amazing things started happening in my life. You know, before I got sober, what I shared, obviously it wasn't that great of a life, but, you know, one of the things I'm most grateful for is my relationship with God today. You know, because I wouldn't be here if He wouldn't have saved my ass. And sometimes I wonder why He saved me out of all the people. I wonder, man, it must have been my grandma doing all that praying. I truly believe that sometimes, that through the work somebody else did, that I was saved. But, you know, I got in this program, I got hungry, I got in service, I worked the steps, I did what a lot of people told me to do, you know, my life changed drastically. You know, I was able to do things in life that I was never able to do before I got here. I know we got probably some newcomers up in here, and you know, today when Rick asked me to speak, I didn't want to come up here and just tell you guys a bunch of war stories. You know, I wanted to come up here and share my experience so that it might benefit somebody else to understand, especially the desperate person, because to be honest with you, if you're not desperate, you're probably not ready for this program. But if you believe you're going to die, you're probably willing to do anything. You're willing to take certain steps. And that's what it's going to take in this program. Nobody wants to do the work in AA if they're having a good time right now. Period. And I've had to dummy it down a whole bunch myself. And consider that I don't know everything in AA. I've read this book probably 7 or 8 times. I read it just this last week. You know, the first 100 pages. It don't take that long to read, by the way. If you need to read the book, it's one book. And it don't take that much better than last week. So, my experience is that I've read this book 6 or 7 times, and I got to keep applying these principles in my life, and I got to keep growing in this program. You know, my life got real good in a matter of 2 or 3 years here. It was amazing. When I got here, I was a high school dropout. I went and got a high school diploma. I got a job. I didn't have a job before I got here. I got my first job. Before I got here, I was a career criminal. Who would have thought I'd ever work? I graduated high school. Somehow I got enrolled in college. What happened when I went to college? I ended up getting a college degree, AA degree. You know, who would have thought a guy like me? Most people who remember me can tell you right now that it's, you know, they would have thought I'd ended up in prison. Other things started happening. My relationships got a lot better. I stopped being a taker and I got to be a giver in my relationship. That was something new for me. My whole life I took from everybody who ever came around me. You know, I was a very self-centered individual. God helped me change that about myself. It's one thing I found in my sister and I got to change that. One of the things I'm most happy for my recovery was I got to let my grandmother see me 5 years sober. Because for a long time, I took from her in different ways emotionally, and she saw me dying throughout when I was drinking. So I got to let my loved ones see me sober. I got to be a good family member. I got to be a contributor to my community. I've got to hold jobs. I can support my family. I've been able to get into a career that's, you know, where it allows me to help other people. I went back and got a second college degree. I got a bachelor's degree. You know, how in the hell did I do that? That was crazy. Right. I didn't even go to school in high school. Who did that? I hated school. I was a Latino. I was drinking vodka in high school. Shoot, that just makes that shit in right in front of the teacher. That, you know, vodka and orange juice. Now I'm working on my master's degree, you know. When God came into my life, He allowed me to have a new life, you know. Enabled me to do things that, you know, I just couldn't have done on my own, to be honest with you. You know, I don't know how some people, I work with people all the time, and I know they're not living a spiritual life. I don't know how the hell they accomplish some of the shit they do. But I know I would have never accomplished none of what I've accomplished without God. Especially because I'm an alcoholic. And you know, that disease is progressive and it wants to kill us. So, yeah, I've been able to accomplish a lot through God's grace and what He's been able to help me to do. So grace is what happened. A lot of things changed for me in the first 3 to 4 or 5 years. I've been involved in service. I've developed a lot of relationships with here. I've helped men and women numerously. I've sponsored other men, things like that. I've helped other people work steps. We talk about doing that in the big book. The 12th suggestion is to help others and carry the message. You know, if you've had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. And then kind of what happened is I got so deep in college and work and stuff. What usually happens to us who've been here a couple of years, we start going through many meetings, and after you read it about 4 or 5 times, you think you know the whole book by heart. So you just put it up on your shelf and you let it sit there and collect dust. And that's kind of what happened with me, you know. I worked with people here and there, and I got away from going to as many meetings and being involved in the service, and I'm guilty of that, you know. And one of the coolest things that's happened since I've been in AA is that my brother was able to get sober. You know, and it is nothing that I did that helped him get sober. Because I remember when I got sober, he stayed out there another 4 or 5 years. Good example of how no human power can help relieve our alcoholism, I cannot help relieve his alcoholism. I would go over there and talk to him. I would try to scare the shit out of him. You are going to die if you don't get this program. You understand? And I would try to convince him of it because I wanted him to get well. But one of the miracles is that he found AA on his own, you know. And now he's got a strong message here. Now he's developed this relationship with some of these meetings and some people who practice these principles out of the big book. And he's on fire right now. And he's teaching me things, you know. And I got to remember, you know, just because I got, you know, twice as long as sobriety as him, as far as time goes, that doesn't mean I can't learn from another individual. Time doesn't mean shit if you're not working this program. I see a lot of guys around here with 30 years running around real fucking bitter. And it says in the big book, you know, bitter is like poison to the alcoholic. It will suck the spiritual life out of us. We can't afford to be bitter. If we're bitter, we gotta work and do an inventory. We gotta learn to forgive. We gotta see where we wronged somebody else. And all that shit. So, you know what? It's humbling. It's humbling to see, like, my brother came over, and I'm so proud, and it feels so good because he's alive. Because I thought he was going to die. You know, and everybody knows that. Most of us probably have a family member who's an alcoholic. It's usually a family disease. And most of us have an experience of trying to help someone we really love. I believe my brother would never be in this room. I sincerely believe that. The work I put into ever trying to help him realize how awful his disease was, what type of help he needed, try to convince him of this program, I was powerless. The only power that helped him was God. You know, It's another example, is that, you know, we can't come here and rely on other people to help to fix us. We've got to follow the suggestions of this book. Set 2 shall become a believer in power greater than ourselves. There's a reason for that. You know? I don't know who, how they figured out how to design it, but they knew exactly what we were going to need here today. And it's a proven solution. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't. I'll tell you right now, he wouldn't be here if it wasn't. I guarantee it. So there's just more miracles that have happened in this program. And, you know, my brother, just seeing him run with his sobriety is attractive. You guys know that when we see somebody and we go, man, he's got something, and it's just, and it's real, and it's God working through him. And he's talking to me about his book, man. This book that I tried, begged, and prayed numerous nights to my God. Please allow him to get this. And he's telling me about it. And he knows this book better than I do, I guarantee. And you know what? I'm not afraid to say that. I still need to learn some things. You know, I can't be afraid to learn from people, whether they're new or old in this program. If it says it in the big book, then I believe it. I've seen this big book says this is a recovery program. You know, sponsors have great ideas. They got some great personal opinions. But if it ain't in this book, just trash it. Because this is all you need. I mean, seriously. People will lead you astray. And like Dale was talking about, we put people on pedestals now. I'm guilty of that. My sponsor told me, if he truly told me, Johnny, you need to go kick that dude's ass to stay sober. In early recovery, I would have done it. In early recovery, I was thinking about stabbing dude in the alarm clock because I thought he was lying. It's true, insane shit. But no, seriously, I would have done anything. If he would have said, he did tell me this, you have to go to that meeting every day. I went to a meeting every day. I said, he said, I got to see you going to a meeting every day for at least a month before I even sponsor you. Tell me just like a preconditioner. You know what I did? I said, I'll see you in a month. And I went to a meeting every day, and I told him, I'm going to keep, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. But you know, that ain't in the book. That is not in the book. That is something he made up. You know? In the book, it has clear-cut directions. It doesn't say you have to do that. Now, going to meetings in early part of your recovery might be a good idea. You know, it is said in the books. If you can honestly ask yourself if you have good intentions, it's possible that you might even want to stay away from a place that's where the drinking activity is going on if you don't have good reason to be there. But the bottom line is the book also says that if you've had a spiritual awakening, you can go anywhere on the face of the earth, regardless of however much alcohol is there, it doesn't matter. It says that the drinking problem doesn't exist for us. I'm looking at this time and it says 42 minutes. You guys trying to listen to me yet? Yeah, so this program is awesome. And, you know, I'm going to tell you guys my age. I'm not even 30. I'll be 32 next month. I got sober when I was 23. You know, and dude, I'm so fortunate to have got sober at my age. You know, and if you're somebody who started drinking young and you started hitting a low spot in your life real young, that's good that you got here young and you can learn more. You know, I take a look back where God's brought me, you know, in the last 8.5 years, and you know, it's nothing I did, it's everything he did, and I was able to do it through him. You know, he wanted me to do this. And I'm just wondering what else is here for me, you know. But you know, the one thing is for sure is that it says in this book I need to continue doing it. I need to continue working the spiritual principles in my life. It's not real hard. They made it easy for us, you know. And so that's what I do. And I gotta be honest with you. First couple years I was here, I did pick up a really good sponsor, and we would step 2 to 3 times a week. We were in his. He had a room. We were in there. We were inventorying. We were learning. We were growing spiritually. I came a long way in that time. I haven't been doing inventories that way for the last few years. And a lot of times, I don't feel like I don't need to do an inventory. A lot of you guys have been here a lot of times, a lot of years, and some of you might agree with this, but there's a part in the book where it talks about heaven right here. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. It talks about just us being in conscious contact with God, and I feel like I have that in this program. Something I built. You know, it's through practice, through relying on God continuously for help and direction, and following through with what he wanted me to do in a lot of situations. So I've done probably 500 to 1,000 inventories, if you really want to break it down. And you know what's crazy is I would probably be drunk if I did. You know, it says in this book, you have to trust God, clean house, and help others. You know, you have to clean house. It's one of the reasons why I didn't make it when I got religious at a younger age. They didn't have a cleaning house portion. I had to go in and do that. That's why this program is different. It works. And, just one more thing. I'm talking long enough, guys. It says I got about 6 more minutes, but I just want to share one last piece with you. You know, I believe anybody, if you want this program, if you're dying, this is it for you. You don't have to really look no further, to be honest with you. My experience was, I looked everywhere. This wasn't the last house on the block for me. I was going to die, or I was going to end up in an institution for the rest of my life if I didn't get sober. I truly believed it, and that's why I sought out this program. And I believe it can happen for anybody. So, I'm grateful that God asked me to speak tonight, Rick, and it was very, you know, a humbling experience because I feel like speaking in a meeting like this carries a lot of responsibility because I need to come here and tell, like Joe said, you guys the truth about what the message is. Is that the message is that none of us ever become above this book and that we all got to continue learning from it. Whether you're new or you're old, it doesn't matter. We got to follow this book or we'll drink again. That's what it says. But I just have one part of this book I want to read. Because when I remember the first time I read this book, this really stuck out to me. Alright? You gotta imagine reading this in a state of mind where you believe you're probably gonna die at this end in the boardroom. And I'll start it right here, and it's talking about one of the chin step promises. It says, we have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow and understand we have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It needs to take time. It takes practice. And it says, it should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God to remove them at once. How many of us are applying that in our life today? I mean, really? I am. You know, I consistently, and sometimes I have to admit when I'm wrong, and then I got to make a phone call and say, hey, I think I owe you an amends. You know, a lot of us have developed this as just a way of living. I never used these tools before I got here. This is everything I learned in AA. So it says, we discuss them immediately, and we make amends quickly if we have harmed anybody. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. It says, once you have the spiritual experience, like I said, I noticed that day, we don't have to fight alcohol anymore. God removed the obsession to drink. And that's how it's been for me. I don't have a drinking problem today. I don't wake up and go, man, I hope I don't drink. I hope when I have them over for this birthday party and they bring over the booze, I hope I don't get tempted. I don't live that way. You know, God don't want me to live that way. And so, I have parties at my house all the time. People bring booze. My in-laws bring booze. I have a problem with it. I'll grab my beer. There's beer in my fridge. I'm not a prisoner of alcohol. It's not a problem for me. God removed it. You know? And it says, for by this time, sanity will have returned. We know that we can't believe that power get ourselves restored to sanity. God does. He follows through with that. We believe in that, and then we're restored to sanity. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. So even if I wanted to drink, God won't let me. Looked like that it was a good idea for just a half a second, because I'm under the spiritual principle today and I've made God my director, my chief and commander-in-chief. If you do that, immediately there's going to be something that hits me and says, get away from me. That is poison for you. You can never afford that. You know? And that's true for me. I've had people try to tempt me with alcohol. It does not work. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this happens automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given trust without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. These are all promises. Right here. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So as long as we maintain our relationship with God by working the 11th step, the 10th step, the 11th step, the 12th step, and the other steps, as long as we continue following these spiritual principles, it promises us that we won't drink again. That's awesome. You know, when I first read that, I thought, that's almost got to be inaccurate. It's too good to be true. I was a dying man, and I felt like nobody was going to throw me a life raft. And when I read this, I thought, if this is for real, this is going to be good. One more thing, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a sub default. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are the thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line always with all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. So it says, the proper use of will, the only strength that our will has is when we turn it over to power greater than ourselves. So, you know, thank you all for listening and coming tonight. It's an honor to be here, and hopefully somebody got something out of that. Thank you for sharing.